against the desecration of the earth. Native American women are rising in the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota, looking at the connection between extraction and sexual abuse. And I think we're really beginning to unite and come out of our silos and bring these movements together.
And so, Eve Ensler, in terms of how people can find out what's happening in this country and around the world, where do you go on the website?
You go to 1billionrising.org. You can either create a rising or join a rising. There are thousands and thousands of risings around the world. And this year, the theme is drumming, dancing, resisting. And I think really it's important to think in your community, what are the forms of violence that you are resisting, and to create your rising, because this is a locally owned, locally determined, globally connected movement that everybody's invited to join.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. Eve Ensler here in New York, the award-winning playwright and creator of The Vagina Monologues, the V-Day global movement to stop violence against women and girls. The campaign called 1 Billion Rising, particularly poignant today, coming out of North Carolina and what has happened there. And Kimberly Crenshaw, thanks so much for joining us. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Our website is democracynow.org.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. The time is 5 o'clock. Next up is the evening news.
In the meantime, we are staying on top of a developing story this morning. A local 18-year-old is shot and killed by police in Ferguson. Family members joined by protesters are demanding answers. News 4's Brittany Noble is live at Ferguson Police Headquarters, where officers have indicated they could release more information later today. Brittany.
Ferguson confirms they shot and killed a suspect. According to Mike Brown's mother, that suspect is her 18-year-old son. She said he was shot on Canfield Drive and left laying in the street for hours. People are angry with police because they aren't releasing details of this case.
My hands up, they shoot me down. Face first into the hot ground. Don't shoot my last words, hear my last sounds. This wasn't me, no it wasn't, it was Mike Brown. 2014, Emmett Till still getting killed. Mama wishing that a kid was still here. When the police get paid, the shooters ain't killed. While we watching our brothers and sisters' blood spill. In the middle of the street, we supposed to keep the peace. But York stayed violent, wonder why we start a riot. Cause we angry and none of us like it. Cause we angry and none of us like it. Seems like nothing changed since the damn 60s. Feels like the Matrix, we repeated history. You can't call this another unsolved mystery. Another black man getting killed by the police.
Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up, don't shoot. Hands up,
but they shoot. My hands up, but they shoot. My hands up.
Wondering what to do for Valentine's Day? Sword fights, tap dancing, prizes, and a talent show are just a few of the exciting acts you'll see at this year's KBOO benefit, Contessa de la Luna's Valentine's Spectacular. Don't miss this annual event that is sure to delight and amaze your eyes and ears. Let La Contessa entertain you Thursday, February 12, 2015, at the Clinton Street Theater. This is the perfect Valentine date night. Show starts at 7 p.m. That's Thursday, February 12th, 7 p.m., Clinton Street Theater. Tickets available now. Go to kboo.fm/talent show. Wondering what to do for Valentine's Day? Sword fights, tap dancing, prizes, and a talent show are just a few of the exciting acts you'll see at this year's KBOO benefit, Contessa de la Luna's Valentine Spectacular. Don't miss this annual event that is sure to delight and amaze your eyes and ears. Let La Contessa entertain you Thursday, February 12th, 2015, at the Clinton Street Theater. This is the perfect Valentine date night. Show starts at 7 p.m. That's Thursday, February 12th, 7 p.m., Clinton Street Theater. Tickets available now. Go to kboo.fm/talent show.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners who donated food for our volunteers today. please call 877-500-5266 to show your support today. Breakfast was provided by Gravy, located at 3957 North Mississippi Avenue. Open at 7:30 a.m. every day and serving breakfast till 3 p.m. Serving lunch on weekdays after 11 a.m. Lunch was provided by Elephant's Delicatessen, making local food from scratch since 1979, with 8 locations in the Portland metro area. Menus and more at elephantsdeli.com. Dinner was provided by Reverend's Barbecue, located in Selwood at 7712 Southeast 13th Avenue, serving smoked brisket, chopped pork, and fried chicken. Family-friendly and open daily at 11:30 a.m., with happy hour from 4 to 6 p.m.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, President Obama yesterday asked Congress to authorize military force against Islamic State extremists.
A citizen journalist filed a lawsuit against the cities of Portland and Gresham, as well as TriMet, stemming from the confiscation of her phone during a police action.
And fighting and shelling continues on the ground in Ukraine, despite representatives on both sides and their international backers reaching a tentative ceasefire agreement last night.
Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Thursday, February 12, 2015. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Eric Tegedoff.
And I'm Sarika Mehta. On Wednesday, President Barack Obama petitioned Congress for the authorization to use military force against Islamic State extremists. The proposal would limit military action to 3 years and bars U.S. troops from enduring offensive combat operations. President Obama expressed his disapproval of another prolonged ground war in the Middle East, but the request allows for flexibility during unforeseen circumstances. This flexibility would allow troops to conduct ground combat operations in limited circumstances and the use of special operations forces to take military action against ISIL leadership, the president said. The authorization for the use of force has not been granted by Congress since 2002.
The ACLU of Oregon has filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court yesterday, arguing that a Portland woman's constitutional rights were violated when a Gresham police officer snatched her phone away while she was live-streaming police activity. Carrie Medina, a longtime live-streaming journalist, was riding the bus home in February 2013 when she saw several police officers tackle a young man. She got off the bus and started up a live-stream video, narrating the events she saw taking place. After Medina had been filming for several minutes, a Gresham officer demanded to see her footage. And when she told him it was a live stream, he took her phone. For more, KBOO spoke with Jan Carson of the ACLU of Oregon.
Can you share with our listeners what Ms. Medina is asking of the court to resolve the matter legally?
What the lawsuit is asking for is, first and foremost, for the court to declare that indeed the officers violated her First and Fourth Amendment right, to declare that she does have the right to free speech and free press to do this type of recording and live streaming. What the main remedy that Ms. Medina is seeking is that the police departments make it clear to all of their officers that the public has the right to film police and that all the police officers be trained to understand and respect those rights. That's the main thing that the lawsuit is asking for, a change in clarification in policy and training to respect the public's right to film the police. It asks for the nominal monetary damages, only those damages that are the minimum needed to be able to file in court and seek a jury trial.
The defendants, will they be sharing a legal team or will they be representing themselves individually?
You know, I don't know how that'll work out. Generally, each city and the TriMet agencies would have their own lawyers. And generally, cities provide representation to their police officers when they face lawsuits based on activities that they were carrying out while they were on duty. But we'll see. We haven't heard back from any of the defendants yet. It'll probably be a few days or weeks before we hear anything back from any of the defendants.
Do you want to ask one last question about the ACLU's development of a smartphone app called Mobile Justice?
Sure. The ACLU strongly believes that recording police activities can be an important tool in making police more accountable to the public that they serve. And to assist people who want to do that type of recording, we've put together a smartphone app called Mobile Justice. And it allows recordings to be uploaded directly to the ACLU with just a push of a button. And we're happy to provide this tool. It also provides access to Know Your Rights information. And more than 750 downloads have occurred since we launched this in November. It's only available on Android right now, but it's a free app. And we're hoping the iPhone version is going to be available very soon.
I've been talking with Jan Carson. She is with the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon. For more information, you can visit their website at aclu-or.org. For KBOO News, this is Robin Ryan.
The mother of an inmate who was beaten to death in an Oregon prison last December has announced her intention to sue the state for wrongful death. 54-year-old Terry Goodman was killed by two other inmates in a common area of the prison. His mother, Betty Knight, filed a tort claim alleging that prison authorities turned a blind eye to the beating, allowing it to continue until it proved fatal. Goodman had been admitted to Snake River exactly 3 months prior to the incident for drug charges and child neglect. It is unclear whether or not the perpetrators of the attack have been identified or charged. The Department of Corrections has not made any public comment on the tort claim, and calls to both the DOC and Oregon State Police regarding the status of the investigation were not returned in time for tonight's broadcast. Snake River Correctional Institution, located near Ontario of the Oregon-Idaho border, has long had the nickname Cowboy Country for its remote location and reputation for violence and institutional brutality. Goodman is the third inmate killed at Snake River since 2008. The previous incident was in 2012, when Michael Hagan was severely beaten and stomped by his roommate, a notoriously violent white supremacist, and then died the next day. Prison officials had ignored Hagan's terrified complaints about his room assignment and reportedly ignored the screams coming from his cell the day he was beaten. The Oregon DOC later released a statement admitting the role of institutional negligence in Hagan's death, and a lawsuit is pending in Mallard County.
An Oregon Department of Corrections inmate who was transferred to Florida last year has gone on hunger strike. Jacob Barrett began his strike on February 1st of this year and declares that he will strike, quote, to the death. He is protesting human rights abuses in the prisons of both states, specifically denial of religious exercise rights, sensory deprivation and solitary confinement, excessive force and brutality by guards, and bigoted treatment of prisoners by guards. Barrett has filed numerous complaints and lawsuits against prison officials in Florida, Oklahoma, and Oregon in the 20 years since he was charged with aggravated murder in Oregon. Barrett appears to have had a troubled prison life, including a stint of unknown length with a white supremacist gang in an Oregon prison and numerous stays in solitary confinement. It appears from his current blog posts and reasons for hunger striking that Barrett has turned to druidic religion and prison activism in recent years. In a blog post related to the strike, Barrett claims to have been in 15 jails and prisons in 5 states, but says that Florida's have been, quote, tenfold the most corrupt. Indeed, the Florida prison system is regarded by many observers to be one of the worst in the country, with 346 prisoners dying in state prisons in 2014 alone. More information about Barrett's strike, including how to reach him, can be found at floridaprisonwatch.blogspot.com.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So we're asking you to do the same. We now turn to our friends at Membership Central to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you so much, Sarika and Eric. Again, we are in our winter membership drive here at KBOO, and once again, good afternoon. We have a membership goal of $300 that we're trying to meet in the next hour, and we are going to make that happen because you all are going to call and renew your membership by dialing 877-500-5266. Even if you're not a member and you need to be a member, 877-500-5266 is the number to dial. Right now, we are listening to the KBOO Evening News, which we have so many volunteers that come in during the week to help make sure that the evening news gets produced accurately and on time and promptly for our listeners to listen to every evening. 877-500-5266 is the number to help us continue to support those volunteers, to keep having them come in and use all the necessities that are needed to produce evening news Monday through Friday. 877-500-5266. Won't you pledge today?
Your contributions facilitate the work of all the volunteers here at KBOO. We cannot do it without your support. We ask in you. We have a little Twitter feed going, hashtag support KBOO, and some comments have been coming in. David wrote in, listening to KBOO is far more pleasurable and guilt-free experience after you have pledged a few bucks. It does sound better once you become a member by calling 877-500-5266. Mike said, Auntie Flag told me to listen to Democracy Now! I still listen to Democracy Now! Via KBOO on morning commutes. And so that's another one. And Simon said, I love that KBOO is community-driven and accessible, unafraid to tackle tough issues in a real way. Yes. At Support KBOO. You can support KBOO right now by calling 877-500-5266. Oh, and we have one more from...
Yeah, Don Merrill. Shout out to Don Merrill. He's a wonderful journalist here at KBOO, one of many. And he says, help keep community radio alive to provide programming to unserved and underserved groups. Shout out to Don Merrill and all to the others who have put the hashtag support KBOO. Shout out to all of you.
Because that's truly what keeps us going, is all the different folks pitching in together. It's not one, it's not two, it's hundreds of people who have supported KBOO these past 40 plus years. You, yes, the listeners, have kept us going, and you, the listeners, are the reason that we're still here. 877-500-5266. Stop on by at 20 Southeast 8th. We'd love to give you a tour of our wonderful studios, let you meet some of the volunteers that are right here on the air right now. So, KBOO.fm. 877-500-5266 or 20 Southeast 8th. Whatever works for you works for us.
We are here and we will take your hard-earned money. 877-500-5266. Call right away. Help us meet our goal.
The Hanjin Shipping Company has decided to pull its business out of the port of Portland. This follows 4 days of shutdowns of Terminal 6, a major import-export terminal at the port of Portland. The Pacific Maritime Association, which manages the terminal, shut down the port rather than respond to requests by union workers to return to the negotiating table. The management has been involved in a labor dispute with the longshoremen who load and unload cargo for over 2 years. The International Longshore Workers Union, or ILWU, has engaged in a work slowdown for the past year in an effort to pressure management to return to negotiations. This has impacted not just the port of Portland, but 29 ports along the West Coast. Instead of negotiating with the union, the management instead brought in foreign workers to run the ports. Hanjin, the world's ninth largest shipping company, threatened to pull out of the port of Portland last October. Now they are apparently carrying out that threat. The move could cost more than 600 longshoremen their job. The union blames the mismanagement of Terminal 6 by a company that they say is trying to leverage its regional monopoly instead of serving customers. For more on this issue, KBOO spoke with Craig Marilese, a member of ILWU.
Well, look, the companies shut down the ports on the West Coast for the past 6 days. You know, they shut them down last weekend, and now they've threatened to shut them down for 4 more days. But the good news is that both sides came back to the negotiating table. The employers haven't been coming back to the table for almost a week, but they came back this morning, and it looks like the talks are more serious, and they're trying hard to make progress. the port shutdowns have been really hard on truckers, and they've been hard on customers who need their containers. And the longshore workers wanted these ports to be open, and they want the employers to keep them open. And if that happens, we can help a lot of truckers, and we can help a lot of people that need their containers. And if we can reach an agreement, all the better, so that we can start helping with the congestion crisis that has plagued the ports for the better part of 2014. It's been a long, drawn-out process, and after 9 months, you don't want to get ahead of yourself. But I think there are signs that progress is being made, and if they stick to it, this could be done very quickly.
That was Craig Marilise of the ILWU, the union representing the dock workers at the Port of Portland.
Low-wage workers at the Portland Airport have been organizing for over a year now to improve their pay and working conditions. The Port Commission released a draft document titled Workplace Initiatives. In this document, the Port Commission recommends to the businesses it contracts with some guidelines for gradually improving benefits, training, equipment standards, and safety. However, the Commission claims it lacks the power to insist that any business actually follow their suggestions. Airport employees have noted that the Port Commission could simply insist on higher standards in the contracts it creates with airport businesses. One airport employee reported, quote, "They're trying to offer us just enough to get us to back down."
Activists speaking out in defense of net neutrality found themselves physically restrained and then removed from the room earlier this week during a press conference held by Federal Communications Commissioner Ajit Pai. KBOO's Robin Ryan spoke with Dr. Margaret Flowers of Popular Resistance about the demonstration and the flurry of activity in Washington's since FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler's recent announcement that it will call for Title II provisions to protect the openness of the Internet.
Kevin Zeese, who's also co-director of PopularResistance.org with me, and I have been engaged for the past 10 months in trying to encourage the FCC to reclassify the Internet as a common carrier under Title II. So we've been down there quite frequently. It's not a strange place to us. And now that the chairman has come out in favor of that actual reclassification, the Republican commissioners are opposed to it. And so Commissioner Pai held a press conference where he basically tried to imply that the president exerted an undue influence on the agency, that the reclassification of the Internet was going to create significant problems. It was really just very misleading, untrue, and actually goes against his base because 85% of Republicans support net neutrality. So he felt it was really important for us to be there to point out those falsehoods and his betrayal of his voting base.
Can you tell me if Popular Resistance made any overtures to discuss with Commissioner Pai their position on what would be best to govern the Internet?
It's interesting. He's an interesting personality. He used to be a top lawyer for Verizon, and he really seems to continue to be very industry-oriented. And we spoke with him back in May, and he just doesn't believe in, you know, reclassifying the Internet. He believes in the position that the industry takes. And really, the statement that he read could have been written by the industry and is kind of part of a desperate attempt by the Republicans now to undermine the net neutrality. And it's a weak attempt, and we wanted to try to expose it early on.
What do you make of the move legislators seem to be taking to assert a role in this process between their status as shareholders of some of the providers, the Internet providers, and the level of campaign contributions by those same companies? Do you think these dynamics can influence what principles guide the formation of policy?
It's not just that whether I think that or not. It's actually, you know, it's a fact now. There are studies showing that our government is a plutocracy, that those who have the wealth and the lobbyists are the ones who determine what our policy is. So the only power that we have to stop that and try to make sure that the interests and needs of the people are heard is to engage in actions that put pressure on them. So it's absolutely that the cable industries are influencing Congress and trying to undermine control of the Internet, because for them, this is a huge moneymaker. The Internet is a tool that we all use in our lives daily, as well as it's become a fantastic tool for citizens to get information about what's really going on. It goes past the propaganda of the commercial media and allows us to see firsthand what's actually happening. The commercial industries would like to gain control of that so they can continue to control the messages and make profits off of this tool that we all use. So they are trying to influence the policy. I don't think it will work. There's a solid majority of people in the United States that believe that the internet is something that should be a level playing field, that all people should have access to the same content, and it shouldn't be based on ability to pay.
What's next? Are there actions planned between now and the vote that's taking place by the FCC on the 26th?
There are actions that are being put together between now and the 26th, mostly focusing on the various telecom companies, Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T, to pressure them to stop fighting Title II reclassification. But we're excited about the vote on February 26th. It's not the end of the game. We need Title II in order to guarantee net neutrality, but we need to continue to push and make sure that we see net neutrality become a reality.
I've been talking with Dr. Margaret Flowers of Popular Resistance. You can get more information by visiting the website at popularresistance.org. I'm Robin Ryan, and you're listening to KBOO News.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Rose City Native Radio at 6, featuring Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, the author of An Indigenous People's History of the United States. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be partly cloudy with dense morning fog and a 50% chance of evening showers, with a high of 61 and a low of 47. Today in history, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or NAACP, was founded in 1909 in New York City. 100 years earlier, February 12, 1809, marks the birthdays of both Abraham Lincoln and Charles Darwin. And the quote of the day is from Darwin, who said, "A man who dares to waste 1 hour of time has not discovered the value of life."
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. So now it's your turn. Joining us now are Sequana and David to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you, Eric, and thank you, Sarika. And we are in our membership winter membership drive, and we are asking our supporters and listeners to become a member or renew your membership by calling 877-500-5266. And the quote that you heard, where Charles Darwin said, basically, to not even waste an hour of time. Well, we don't waste any time here at KBOO. Every time is accounted for. 365 days a week, 7 days a week, Monday through Sunday, sun up to sundown. There's not a time wasted here at KBOO. And you know why? Because you, member, have made KBOO sustainable and kept us going for over 45 years. And we want to keep going for another 45 years and beyond by having you continue to invest into a great radio station that is about community, that is about bringing you public affairs that are not fluff stories, and to bring you local news to show for shows or for evening news, like shows like Evening News. It's not really a show, but we bring you news every week, public affairs every week, and we want your support to help us continue to do that. 877-500-5266. Pledge your support. Become a member. Be a sustainable member and pledge your support by donating $20 every month. And if you do that, you will get a KBOO Community Radio hoodie, which has been flying off the shelves. Help us continue to be a supporter of KBOO and pledge your support, $20 a month. Earn a KBOO Community Radio hoodie by dialing 877-500-5266 or come down to KBOO and pledge your support and show your wonderful face and see the other wonderful faces here that are doing the evening news and our air room navigator. And come down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and show your support that way. 877-500-5266 is one of the ways, or you can come down to the radio station here at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
You know, today is a very auspicious day. Darwin's birthday, Lincoln's birthday, the founding of the NAACP. It could be an auspicious day for you, the day that you joined the family of community radio KBOO. The day that you said, hey, this is my station. I want to make it my station, keep it my station, by becoming a foundation member by calling 877-500-5266. When you call that number, we enter you in the sweepstakes. When you get into the sweepstakes, you have a chance to win a $300 gift certificate to the Portland Saturday Market and 4 months of beginning lessons at Taoist Tai Chi Society of the USA right here on Northeast Gleason Avenue. So you can learn some Tai Chi, you get some cool things if you win, but the thing that you really win when you call 877-500-5266 is you win community radio.
That's
you
right.
Win KBOO.
Yeah.
You win having this station hot and live and on the air every time you turn on that dial. And that's what you really win. We're here for you. We're asking you to come through for us right now. Maybe you can't come through for $20 a month. I understand that. That's a substantial amount of money. But maybe you can do $5 a month for a $60 membership. We have some lovely books and gifts that we can send your way. Call the number 877-500-5266. One of our friendly volunteers will pick up that phone and say, hey, would you like to contribute to KBOO today? And you say, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. And they'll tell you some of the benefits you can get in addition to your membership, and they'll ask you what's your favorite part of KBOO, and you'll tell them, I just love the evening news. It keeps me informed. It keeps me on the pulse of the city and the pulse of the world.
Absolutely.
Give us a call. Join community radio today.
877-500-5266 is the number to dial. Investing in your community is the best thing that you can do. And our reports show that in Oregon, state legislatures are the only reports you'll hear on the air about the laws being passed that impact our lives. KBOO does that. We may not be able to get to Salem, but we definitely are going to make sure that we get the messages and the things that are happening at Salem or at happening at City Hall. This is what KBOO Evening News does every week, month to month, 365. And our beloved Robin Ryan, she's on it. She's back here at KBOO, and she's back on the prowl to make sure that those people who are in City Hall are accounted for. 877-500-5266. Show our wonderful journalists like Robin Ryan love and let her know that she is appreciated for all the hard work that she has put in the past and that she's putting in now. Show love for our volunteers. 877-500-5266. We're able to be here because you support us. You support the volunteers that come here every week to do the work that needs to be done. 877-500-5266. We need your support. We're trying to earn $300 right now, and we're going to make that happen because you will make that happen. 877-500-5266. We're going to go back to the evening news with Eric and Sarika now.
It's 5:32, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Business schools preach a strict antisocial doctrine of corporate management that comes down to this: CEOs must be idiots. By that I mean the original Greek word, idiotes, which applied to people who care only about themselves and the prosperity of their immediate family, rejecting any responsibility to the larger society, civic affairs, and the common good. That selfish ethos is what prevails in today's corporate suites, where it's claimed that the only responsibility of executives is to maximize profits for the family, i.e. themselves and major shareholders. Idiotes are free to stiff workers, sidestep environmental rules, shaft consumers, etc. But now comes an apostate to this doctrinal idiocy. Mark Bertolini, corporate chief of Aetna, says CEOs should raise the minimum wage to a level approaching minimal fairness. Rather than calling for it, he did it. lifting Aetna's lowest wage to $16, plus improved health benefits. Bertolini even did the unthinkable by publicly revealing that these increases really are not financially painful for corporations. Total cost to Aetna will be about $26 million a year. Nothing for a giant with annual revenues of $62 billion. The only pain Bertolini might feel is loneliness when he enters the CEO club and sees other insurance chieftains turn their backs, shunning his leadership on the moral matter of shared prosperity. CEOs of Humana, Anthem, and other insurers say no to raises, sniffing that they pay, quote, competitive wages, which is just a dishonest way of saying low wages. This is Jim Hightower saying, but Aetna has just lifted our national standard for competitive wages and started an honest public conversation about the morality of those at the top jacking up their pay while holding down everyone else. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out at hightowerlowdown.org.
A candlelight vigil in North Carolina last night was attended by thousands of people. The vigil honored the lives of a young family that was gunned down execution style earlier this week in what appears to be a hate crime. 21-year-old Yusor Abu Salah, her husband, and her sister were killed in the attack. All three were Muslims, and the two sisters wore religious headscarves. The alleged killer, 46-year-old Craig Stephen Hicks, has been arrested and charged with three counts of first-degree murder. On Facebook, Hicks described himself as an anti-theist and has posted condemnations of all religions, including Islam. The Council on American-Islamic Relations, the nation's largest Muslim civil rights and advocacy organization, today called on law enforcement authorities to look into the possibility that this was a hate crime. KBOO's Janka Soderberg spoke with Ibrahim Hooper, the communications director for the council.
Has there been anything that's come out about the motivation behind this shooting, Ibrahim?
Well, we hear reports about a dispute over parking, but somebody doesn't shoot three people in the head execution style over some parking dispute. There's got to be more to it, just logically, one would consider. And unfortunately, this individual who's accused of killing these three people had posted anti-Muslim, anti-religion messages on Facebook. He posted an image of a loaded weapon that he had. The family indicates that he has threatened family members in the past. And this comes at the same time that there's a tremendous rise in the level of anti-Muslim sentiment in our society. And we just believe that all of these factors together at least point in the direction of a bias motive that needs to be investigated.
And is the FBI getting involved to look into this as a potential hate crime?
I believe the FBI is involved in the case, and we're not criticizing the criminal investigation. He has been charged with three counts of first-degree murder, and really there's not much more you can do to a person than that kind of charge. So we're satisfied on that end, but we just want the bias angle investigated because of the circumstances. And one other factor is that two of the victims wore religious attire in that they wore headscarves or hijab. And we just believe that even if it was a catalyst of the parking issue, that doesn't exclude a bias motive. They're not mutually exclusive.
Have you noticed nationally an increase in the attacks against Muslims following the attack on the Charlie Hebdo headquarters in France and the media following up on that?
Yeah, we have seen a tremendous rise in the level of anti-Muslim hate rhetoric in our society, and we're starting to see an increase in Muslims being targeted. Just today, I've seen a number of reports of Muslim women being targeted for being run off the road, almost being run down in a parking lot, having a gun pulled on them. ourselves, we had a man arrested in San Diego for threatening to kill our staffers in San Diego, and an assault rifle was found in his home. I mean, just personally, I've received dozens and dozens of hate-filled calls and emails, and I've had a number of threats that have been reported to the FBI, to me personally.
Well, I do want to thank you so much for joining us again. I've been speaking with Ibrahim Hooper, who's with the Council on American-Islamic Relations, about this week's killing of a young family, Dia Shadi Barakat, age 23, his wife, Yusor Abu Salha, 21, and her sister, Razan Abu Salha, 19. Thank you so much, Ibrahim Hooper, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
An Indian grandfather was assaulted by police in Alabama on Friday. 57-year-old Sureshbhai Patel had been visiting relatives in Madison, Alabama. The man was out walking about the wealthy suburb community when he was stopped by police. Mr. Patel stated, quote, "No English, Indian, walking." He pointed to his son's home where he was staying. One of the officers then promptly threw him to the ground, injuring his cervical spine and causing him to be temporarily paralyzed. Mr. Patel's injuries required emergency surgical fusion of his cervical spine. The officer had been placed on administrative leave. Police video and audio of the incident is currently being withheld from the public. The Indian government in New Delhi spoke with U.S. representatives and demanded an immediate and thorough investigation of the assault.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has released a report that recommends population control for seabirds in an effort to help salmon populations. KBOO reporter Nico Kwiatkowski spoke with representatives of the Audubon Society and the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission about the proposed culling of double-breasted cormorants in the Columbia River.
Sand Island sits where the Columbia River meets the sea. Not only is it the largest island in the mouth of the Columbia, it's also home to the largest breeding colony of double-breasted cormorants in North America. Cormorants are mid-sized coastal birds that feed primarily on fish. And that's exactly why some wildlife managers and conservationists consider this colony to be a big problem for Columbia River salmon. A new management plan by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers recommends the killing of around 26,000 of these cormorants in an effort to preserve salmon populations. The colony began small, with a population of around 100 pairs in 1989. In little more than 20 years, the colony has now grown to nearly 15,000 pairs. Meanwhile, salmon populations have been in a steady decline. 8 species of Columbia River salmonids are listed as either threatened or endangered, including Chinook and Coho salmon, as well as steelhead. These numbers have many people concerned, including Sarah Thompson with the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission.
Salmon in the Pacific Northwest and the Columbia River Basin for the tribes is an integral part of our subsistence, our ceremonies, our cultures. You know, our creation story teaches us that we were created in this landscape with these resources, that they provided themselves, they stepped forward and offered themselves to provide for us. And as a result, we have a responsibility to assure their survival for the next 7 generations.
After exploring alternative actions, such as trying to coerce the colony to move, the Army Corps of Engineers has decided to use lethal force. The final goal is to reduce the population by 57%, which involves shooting around 11,000 adults and killing around 15,000 unborn chicks using a technique known as egg oiling. To many, like Bob Salinger of the Portland Audubon Society, these measures seem extreme and unnecessary.
We oppose the U.S. Army Corps' decision to kill upwards of 11,000 cormorants and destroy 27,000 nests. We don't think it's supported by the science. We think it could have a significant impact on Western populations of double-crested cormorants. And, you know, most importantly, we don't think the Corps has actually done what it needs to do to address the primary cause of salmon declines, and that's the way they manage their dams.
The current disagreement hinges on where and how ecological balance should be maintained. And there are many ways to look at this dilemma.
The system, as we see it right now, is currently out of balance. I mean, from 2010 to 2013, we're talking a three-year time period, the double-crested cormorant population at East Sand Island consumed at least 74 million juvenile salmon. That's a lot of fish.
Bob Salinger sees it differently.
It's important to note the Corps wants people to believe that cormorant populations have just exploded in the western United States. That's actually completely inaccurate. In fact, cormorant populations in the western United States, and that's west of the Rocky Mountains, are an order of magnitude smaller than they were 100 years ago. And throughout most of their range, they're either stable or declining. The only place that they're doing well is on East Sand Island, and that's where the Corps proposes to go in and kill thousands and thousands of them. We're very concerned about salmon as well. We certainly want to see salmon recovered. We think the Corps should be focusing on the primary causes of decline, and that is the way they manage their dams, how much water they spill through their dams and when they spill it, and habitat loss and fragmentation. And so that's really where we think they should be focusing. You know, let's focus on the core causes of salmon decline, not scapegoat wild birds.
Sarah Thompson thinks the situation is more dire.
We have been studying the impacts of cormorants and terns and their impacts on juvenile salmon for the past decade. We can no longer afford to study the cormorant impacts without addressing their threats to salmon recovery.
For KBOO News, I'm Nico Kwiatkowski.
Now is your chance to show support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Joining us now are Sequoia and David to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Yes.
Well, the first thing you can do is you can pick up your telephone mm-hmm. and you can dial 877-500-5266 and say, hey, I'm listening to the KBOO News. Mm-hmm. That was a very thoughtful story about salmon recovery versus birds versus dams versus... Mm-hmm. And what I appreciate so much about a story like that is it didn't just smooth over the conflict and the issues that are there. It really got into the heart of the issue, and it's a tough one. It's yeah. a tough call, and I like the way it was presented. That's the way we try to do it here at KBOO. We try
Absolutely.
To give you the information so you can help make informed decisions. Hey, I really want to send out a huge thank you to Judy from up in Sandy. She's a new member. She